You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Robert Lee and Paul Eales.
Hello and welcome to the Race to Dubai show. Coming up, we'll be previewing the next event on the European Tour, the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship presented by EGA, part of the prestigious Rolex Series. Plus, we'll be joined by the new European Ryder Cup captain, Padraig Harrington, as he begins his quest to retain the trophy won so memorably last year at Le Golf National. That's all to come on the Race to Dubai show. Hello, I'm Robert Lee, and I'm joined today by former European Tour winner, all three tours conquered by Paul Eales, and Roddy Williams, who is head of content for the European Tour. Welcome, Paul.
Morning, Robert. How are you?
Yeah, excellent. Roddy, how are you?
Very good, thank you, Robert.
So give us a clue, give us a heads up, the stuff that you've got in the pipeline coming our way this year over the next 12 months.
Oh, goodness me, there's an awful lot. I think what we'd be looking to do is try to sort of continue to grow the interest in the European Tour and our players through a variety of humorous content, challenges, telling the story through through the website and through our digital channels. Very exciting year ahead. I think that, you know, we have really started to transform a lot of the content that we've been delivering for the European Tour.
Award-winning content.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, hopefully that will continue. But I think that we want to continue in that same vein. And we've got a few things going on, a couple of things going on this week, which will be revealed later on in the week. But
give us a clue.
Oh, I think that, well, it's
at the HSBC?
Okay. In Abu Dhabi. I think if you remember a couple of years ago, we had the awkward reporter.
Yes.
Which was good fun. And
I always thought that was a once only. You could never do that again and catch everyone off guard like that.
We won't be doing that again, but I think that, you know, I think we'll see some more funny content coming out during the course of this year. And I think that it seems to be what people love. We love doing it. The team are incredibly creative and they have a lot of fun. And obviously getting the buy-in from the players is absolutely key to it. And I think that it's one thing that we love at the European Tour is working with the players. They seem to enjoy this type of content, this type of challenge. And I think that when we can bring that out and really showcase it, we're onto a bit of a winner.
I was going to say, how, generally speaking, amenable are the players to perhaps, you know, having a laugh at themselves, maybe? It may be that, whatever you're trying to shoot.
I think they're very good. I think that, you know, we see that with quite a lot of the pieces we've done. And, you know, I highlight, for example, that awkward reporter where we had people behind the scenes really poking a lot of fun at the players. And I think that, you know, everybody engages with it. They love it. It's good fun. I think that, you know, everybody out there, they've got a sense of humour. I think that that's something that these guys have. And, you know, get them on the right topic, the right subject. I think that we can really have a lot of fun with them.
And is that something, Paul, you feel you missed out on in your day?
No, but I do enjoy watching it now. I mean, I think the first one that I saw was the Little Billy
interviews, yeah.
Yeah, with Rory. I thought that was absolutely amazing. And it was good for the tour, and it's also good for the player because you can sort of not catch the player off guard, but you can get a little bit behind that defence that you might see when he's out on the golf course. So I think it's all brilliant stuff, and the guys are doing a brilliant job. They really are.
Yeah, and as well as the digital content, Roddy, anything else we should be looking out for?
I think that obviously we'll be trying to tell the story across our platforms. But no, I think it's going to be a very interesting year on the tour. I think we all come into a new year with new ideas, new ambitions, new plans. And I think that, you know, let's see how things go. We're kicking off the year on an absolute high in Abu Dhabi with the new Rolex Series event. And I think that really it will be, you know, setting the benchmark very high, and then we continue throughout the year.
God, it's almost like you read the script there. The Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship presented by EGA, the first Rolex Series event. It's a tried and tested event on the European Tour, but it's the first time it's been a Rolex Series event. So it's up the ante significantly, Paul. What does that mean for people who are not quite sure what a Rolex Series event means?
Once you go to a Rolex Series event, you actually see how much bigger it is to a regular tour event. Obviously, you've got some bigger names, but all the infrastructure around it, the media interest. And now, in the world of golf, the Rolex Series means something. People talking about it all the time, where it wasn't before. So, but I think for the players going forward, it's going to be different for me this year because we've gone to a point system rather than just prize money alone. So that, in a way, levels the playing field a little bit for some of the players that aren't playing in this massive money event that's the Rolex Series. But it's still one of the things that your new player on tour will be looking forward to. He will deem his season a success if he can qualify for Rolex Series events following season.
But as you know, Roddy, your bank manager is not bothered whatsoever, how many points you get. He wants to know how many dollars are going in the old account. And in terms of that, that's why you want to play in a Rolex Series event.
Absolutely. These, everybody out there, they're all professionals, and making money is absolutely key for it. I think it's the prestige as well of the tournaments, I think, though, that really comes out. I think that's really what stands out for the Rolex Series events. They are prestigious tournaments. They're played on some of the best courses that we play all season. You know, really tough challenges. And I think players want to compete against the best. They want to test themselves against the best players on the best courses. And I think the Rolex Series deliver that.
And your caddy gets a gold bib if you've won one of those. Well, not actually gold, but it's coloured gold.
Gold-coloured.
Yeah, nice for him, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess it's he gets to wear it the next year.
Yeah.
Yeah, as a
or the next event.
Well, Tommy Fleetwood's caddy, he's going for a three-peat along with Tommy Fleetwood. Just to give you a clue, who's playing? Brooks Koepka, Dustin Johnson, Tyrrell Hatton, Louis Oosthuizen, Rafa Cabrera-Bejer, Eddie Pepperell, Ian Poulter, Lee Westwood, Hao Tong Lee, Brandon Grace, Henrik Stenson, Martin Keimer. An amazing field.
It's a great field, isn't it? And as you said, Tommy going for his third win last year. Actually, the 2 years that he's won, driving accuracy and greens in regulation, they were Tommy's formula to win. Yes, he holed a few monster putts coming down the stretch last year to win at, 22 under par or something like that. But it was his long game that actually saw him through over those 2 years. So it's a big golf course. You need to hit it a long way. Tommy does that. You've got to be accurate. Tommy's accurate. And I think he'll go close again this year.
How much, Roddy, have you enjoyed the journey of Tommy Fleetwood so far in his career?
Oh, I'm loving it. It's great, isn't it? He's really interesting character. I think he's brought a whole new persona onto the tour. I think his relationship with Francesco Molinari, as we saw at the Ryder Cup, was probably the highlight for me last year.
Will be tested at the British Masters.
but I think that, he's great. And it just amuses me, his hair and, everything. I think he's a real breath of fresh air on the tour. And I think he's a fantastic golfer. He really is. We've seen that. And I think he continues to grow and develop as a player.
So as defending champion, and you were quite private about what might happen this week, maybe he's going to feature in one of your bits and pieces.
Absolutely.
Your online content. I'm just putting it out there, maybe.
So. Yes. No, of course, it's his birthday on Saturday. So, as well, we'll have birthday celebrations for him and a lot of things going on. It'll be amazing if he manages to win the same event three times in a row. I think only six players have done that previously. And I think that he'll be right up there with the greats of the European Tour, if he can actually manage that.
Six players have won the same tournament 3 years in a row.
Yes. So can I name them now?
Yeah, Seve will be one, won't he? Seve must have done
Monty's
that.
Monty's
one. Monty, Seve.
Monty, oh, good call, Rob.
Tiger, Sergio, Ernie Els.
Oh, knowledge there.
Come on, who's the last?
Don't know.
Go on then, Roddy, you got the answers. Rattle it off.
Okay, the others are Ian Woosnam, winning the Monte Carlo Open in 1990, 91 and 92.
Wow, I never got that.
Nick Faudo winning the Irish Open in 91, 92 and 93. Monty, BMW PGA Championship in 98, 99, 2000. Tiger Woods winning the WGC Bridgestone Invitational in 99, 2000, 2001 and again in 2005, 6 and 7. Plus the WGC Mexico Championship in 5, 6 and 7. Ernie Els, Heineken Classic in 2002, 2003 and 2004.
Ooh,
is
that in Perth? Australia.
Yep. Yeah. And then I've got Sergio Garcia. Slightly odd one with Sergio.
Is
bit of a trick one.
The one with the year missing?
Correct. Well, okay. A few years missing. 2011, 2017 and 2018. Okay. The same event, three in a year.
Does that count as a three-peat?
No,
stretching it a little
not
bit.
Not happy with that.
Yeah. but as you can see, I mean, all those players are some of the greats of the European Tour and world golf. And I think if Tommy Fleetwood can emulate those this week, what an achievement that would be.
Absolutely. Robert was once a great of the European Tour, and Monte Carlo, you've got his. Didn't you shoot 24 or something for nine holes? What
no,
did you do around Monte Carlo?
I managed to scuff it around there in 27 blows for nine holes at some point.
What?
Anyway, moving right along.
In the presence of greatness.
Sorry, I did it twice. Sorry, moving on. I can't dwell on that. Let's keep going. Tommy Fleetwood, how rusty will he be? And it seems ridiculous because golf seems to go all the way out and butts right up against Christmas, then there's a couple of weeks off, then you're off again. How rusty will these players be?
Competition-wise, yes, they will be because they haven't played for a number of weeks. But certainly, Tommy lives up in the northwest of England. The weather's been good there. He's also been in Dubai on a...
Rewind. The weather's been good in the northwest of England?
Yeah.
You mean it just hasn't been unplayable?
No, it's been good for this time of the year. Context, Robert. You know, December, January. There's no
scenes of, you know, playing along the great golf courses there on the West Coast, in your shorts,
England's golf course.
Minus 2 degrees and a 40-mile-an-hour breeze.
We've had none of the minus two.
It's been a good winter.
I haven't seen anybody in shorts, but it's been good. And of course, Tommy's been away with the family, I think, to Dubai. But in terms of striking the golf ball, I think Tommy will be as good as ever.
That's what his game's. It's built on that, really.
Of course it is, and it's just, you know, whether he's into game mode during the week. But I don't think he'll be rusty at all. I think he'll be fine and ready to go, refreshed and ready.
Well, Tommy's got to beat a great field. The highest-ranked player in the world in the field is Brooks Koepka. He's delighted to be across in this part of the world playing on the European Tour for the first time in 2019.
Yeah, it's obviously nice to be back. I enjoy playing this golf course. You know, it's a fun place to be. Feels like I'm like reliving those memories when I was on the European Tour and Challenge Tour and being over here. So it's always nice to bring those back. Obviously, there's a lot of guys you don't get to see very often, and you know, you made some great friendships over here when I was playing. But when you come back and see everybody, it makes it a little bit more special. The camaraderie over here is a bit different. I like it more personally than I do in the States. Seems there's 30 or 40 guys, you know, on a flight. You know, basically the whole flight's everybody, you know, players, caddies, things like that. And everyone kind of hangs out in two or three hotels. And everybody seems to, you go to dinner, you have a hard time over here running into, you know, one player because there's 30 or 40 of them, or caddies or coaches, whatever it might be, all at the same restaurant. And I think that's kind of fun. Everybody's always laughing, joking. The attitude over here is a little different. The sense of humor over here is a little better. So it's quite fun.
So Brooks, obviously pleased with the time that he spent with us on the European Tour. I like to say that Brooks was born in the USA, but made in Europe. That's how I like to look at it, Roddy. What do you say?
I like that phrase. I think that's fantastic. I think that it's wonderful to see somebody who's came through the Challenge Tour, and really he's, you know, shown a lot of success. And then what a year he's had last year. I mean, absolutely incredible. And obviously have come through and now be world number two, and really, you know, a very close battle at the top of the world rankings at the moment. And I think that, you know, it's wonderful to see him over here. And I think he's a great player. Could well suit him this week. You know, let's wait and see.
Isn't it interesting, Paul, to hear an American player differentiate between what life is like on the PGA Tour and the European Tour, and to actually say, put it out there, that he prefers the way we do it?
Yeah, he summed it up perfectly, didn't he? That you're all on the same aeroplane, you're in the same hotels, you eat at the same restaurants. It's like a travelling band in Europe, where very much in the US they're individual operators, aren't they? And they go around maybe to take the families a little bit more. But, you know, he's grown up on the Challenge Tour, as Roddy said, and there wasn't a lot of money around at that time, so you don't have the choices as much as you would when you've got millions in the bank.
You know, and I know that at the Rolex event in Geneva on the Challenge Tour, that they had an evening at the clubhouse. It's a great event for players on the Challenge Tour. The Rolex is a special event in Geneva. And they had a night one night, and they got Brooks up on a satellite link. So Brooks was on a big screen talking to all the young lads playing on the Challenge Tour, telling them that, you know, the time of his life was had when he spent his year on the Challenge Tour. I mean, he won three times and he moved on, but he said that was the greatest time of his life, and he was saying how much that they should treasure the opportunity to play on the Challenge Tour, to move on to the European Tour. Apparently it was brilliant. Yeah. You didn't have to do it.
No. I mean, it's just pure golf on the Challenge Tour, isn't it? The guys are just fighting so hard. They're playing for not a lot of money in comparison, but they know the rewards that are there if they get through. And now Brooks is looking back on that and saying to the guys, come on, you know, have a great time while you're there. But beyond the Challenge Tour is riches that you would never believe. And that's where he's got to now. But all of that was based on the fact that they embraced the travel of the Challenge Tour and the camaraderie of the other players. And, you know, those lads, they're all in the same boat. They haven't got a lot of money, but they've got that one shared goal of wanting to make it to the big time and obviously become a major winner and world number one.
And his buddy, Roddy, Dustin Johnson's going to be across again, third time in 3 years. So it's a venue and a golf course that he likes.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, I think we've already said it's a long golf course. I think it's the third longest that we play on the tour all year. And I think that that certainly plays into their hands a little bit there. But, you know, they're great friends, and I think it's going to be, there'll be some fun had by them both over here. I think they clearly seem to enjoy it coming over here to the Middle East. And it's a great start to the year to see them in the first event of the year for us.
Even in the short time, relatively short time, that we've played this golf course in Abu Dhabi, have you noticed how the game has moved on
from when players first got... Because Martin Keimer won around there with 24 under par. Rory finished second at 16 under par. When the rough was super thick, people thought that 16 under par would win by four. He lost by eight to Martin Keimer. Ridiculous week's golf. But can you see in the time that they've had that tournament there how distance has played a part in how the course is played, in that short time?
Yeah, yeah, the leading score's still around that 20 under par mark, but I think what you're finding now is that the bottom end of the field are shooting more and more under par as they become more accustomed to the golf course. I think the course hasn't changed that much, but if they get that wind blowing, Rob, then the scores will go up. But other than that, the condition of the course is just fantastic. And if players can hit the fairways, they've got a chance at the big greens, the big targets out there, and the putting surfaces are so good. And anybody that gets reasonably hot with the putter that week, and of course, like you say, they're all reaching the par fives now, which wasn't always the case going back to when, was it Scott McCarron who won the first one going back?
Chris DeMarco
won the first one. So, I think it's... It has changed, but I think it's changed in the depth of the field.
He won with his wife on the bag, I believe, at the time. She was caddying for him.
Good knowledge.
I think that's so. Right. Yes, I believe so.
And I was going to talk about Lee Westwood, who won with his partner on the bag, Helen, in South Africa just a couple of months ago.
Absolutely. Great to see Lee back in the winner's circle.
He won that so well, didn't he?
Brilliant. I've got high hopes for Lee this year. I think that I think he could really have a good year in 2019. I think it's, to get that win again...
In the way that he did it.
Absolutely.
It's the way he won.
Correct. I love that tournament. Again, it was a Rolex Series event, and, he's added that his name to the list of Rolex Series winners now, and I think that, to come in having got that, I can't remember how long it was since he won, but it was what, 4 years or something?
It was something
about
like that,
four
yeah.
Years
yeah.
Since he won.
Yeah, it was emotional.
15, I think.
Yeah, and yeah. I think that, to come back, the way he won it is going to do his confidence the world of good, and I think he's going to have a really strong year this year.
Yeah, and I think it's horses for courses. Lee had played well around Sun City before, hadn't he?
He won it before.
Yeah, but of course you go to this week in Abu Dhabi and, Ross Fisher's played well. Dustin Johnson's played well.
Is there a desert thing, do you think? Because Lee has played well in Dubai, he's had a good desert career. Is there such a thing as being a desert player?
I think there possibly could be, but I think it's more subtle than that certain players feel at home on certain courses, whether they're more right to left, left to right. They know that they've got the edge on the par threes or the par fives. So I think it's an individual thing. I wouldn't say that, right, I'm in the desert and I'm going to win type of thing every year, but I think that it's more subtle because the Dubai course is very different to this one in Abu Dhabi.
Yeah, it certainly is. Ian Poulter's across and resurrected his career last year on the PGA Tour, played Ryder Cup. What can he look forward to in 2019?
Yeah, absolutely. A fantastic performance in the Ryder Cup in particular. He just loves that event, doesn't he? And whilst we're not in a Ryder Cup year this year, although obviously qualification towards the end of the year, I think that, confidence is such a big thing in golf. And I think that when players have won, when they've had success in the Ryder Cup, that tends to fuel more success from what I can see.
Yeah, and I think Ian had that bit of a wake-up call where he lost his card but didn't lose his card, and then he sort of upped his work rate and got back into it again. And I think he's going to be...
He was part of the miracle at Medina. We know when he played with Rory and he birdied the last five holes to make it 10-6 going into the singles. And then after that, we know what the Europeans did. They beat the Americans. It was incredible. And he had the miracle at Sawgrass when he was looking to go drop out of everything. And he hit it, shanked his second at the last, unplayable, dropped it out. Somehow he got it up and down from the middle of the woods. He stiffed it. It was an impossible shot. And he made five and that made all the difference. And then he was back.
Yeah, he was.
And so he's been party to two miracles.
Yeah, but that's the type of player Ian Poulter is. He's all in, isn't he? Absolutely
he
all
is,
in. And when he gets fired up, you can see it in his eyes. I mean, I don't think, even when you look at Seve and some of the pictures back, Seve, he burned the Ryder Cup, didn't he, in the European Tour. And Poulter's eyes are almost popping out on stalks, aren't they, in Ryder Cup. So if he can take some of that this season into European Tour events, then... Who knows what can happen?
Well, this might be one of the hardest tipping weeks of the year when you consider Fleetwood, Koepka, Johnson, Hatton, Oosthuizen, Cabrera Bayo, Pepperell, Poulter, Westwood, Haotong, Lee, Grace, Henrik Stenson, Keimer and company. Very difficult to pick a winner. But, Paul, you probably have done already, or who you think is going to win.
Well, yeah, I think Tommy's going to go. He's comfortable around that course. He's refreshed. He'll have the family there. He's got a birthday coming up. Everton have had a couple of wins. And so I think Tommy, again, I'm a huge, huge fan of Tommy Fleetwood. I think he'll go very, very close this week.
So just to remind you, because it's 2019, it's a competition that runs all year long, presenter versus co-presenter. You get two picks. One's got to be outside the top 50 from last year, and one's got to be someone, anyone else in the field that you think can win. And we keep a score, so you get 20 points for a win, 10 for a top 10, 5 for a top 20, but minus 5, crucially, if you miss the cut, and that can be the difference maker. That really can. So you're going to go for Tommy Fleetwood?
Tommy Fleetwood, yeah. I will go for him. And my out, you want my other one?
Oh, yes.
Is Gavin Green. It's a golf course where you need to hit it a long, long way.
He does do that.
He does that comfortably with a bit to spare. And so I'm looking for him to go close and really emerge on the European Tour this year.
Yeah, it's a long hit. Oh, well, you don't have to be a long hitter, but it is a long hitter's bias. If you go and play Abu Dhabi, no doubt about that. Roddy, who are you picking?
I'd like to see Matt Wallace kick on this year. I mean, when I say kick on, I mean, he won three times last year. Fantastic season. But I'd like
what would that look like, Matt Wallace kicking on?
I think performing on in the bigger events, in the Rolex Series events. I don't think he reached the same heights in the Rolex Series events and obviously the major championships and the
WGCs. That's why he didn't make the Ryder Cup, really. Yeah,
and so I think on the back of, you know, his confidence has to be sky high after winning those three titles last year. And I really think he could have a good week this week. You know, it's just, you know, another opportunity for him to really continue his progression. I think that I'd love to see him doing well this year. In terms of somebody outside, I always like looking at the graduates. I tend to sort of, you know, try to find a graduate from the Challenge Tour or from the qualifying school. And I think, you know, Challenge Tour wise, I think that probably
that's very uncertain, isn't it? I think that probably that's quite uncertain.
I'm never certain. I like to hedge my bets.
Okay.
I'd go for Adrianus. I think he's
a lot of people talking about him.
Yeah. I hear he's. I've heard good things about him as well. And I think that he's really got a bit of game about him,
and he's long.
He's long.
It's another thing.
He's long. You know, he's Spanish. I always like a Spaniard with a bit of Spanish flair as well. You know, I grew up watching Seve. You know, yeah. I absolutely loved Seve. I loved Ollie. I love Sergio. John Rahm.
Do you like a bit of passion
now
on the golf course?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you mind a bit of club throwing and club snapping? Do you mind a bit of that?
I'm not so keen on that, but I love
bit of swearing, bad language, you know.
Not so keen either.
In Spanish.
No. If I can't understand it, I don't mind so much. But no, I think that, you know, players who've got that imagination.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I think it's, you know, if they've got the game, they've got the imagination, they've got the passion. Yeah, they're the players I love watching. I think that, and from what I've heard, I believe Andrew's got this opportunity as well.
Well, we spoke about the Challenge Tour with Brooks Koepka, didn't we? And
yeah.
I think from the 2017 graduates, I think 8 of the 15 actually maintain the playing privileges for this year. So if the next crop coming on, I think, have we got 4 or 5 Scottish players that came through the Challenge Tour this time. So another home bias there.
Absolutely, and I think they're all in the field this week in Abu Dhabi. So
at one point in Johannesburg before the break, there were 4 Scots in the top 4 places. And when's the last time you've seen that?
We had the conversation not that long ago, didn't we? Where are all the next breed of Scottish players coming through, and suddenly they've all appeared sort of in one go, and hopefully, because they've got a Challenge Tour ranking on tour, they're going to get a real good run at the race to Dubai this year.
I'm going to go for Louis Oosthuizen, who's done very well for me recently, because he's won and he played very well in South Africa. He is, I think, going to have a really fine 2019. I think he's back in the right frame of mind, and if Louis stays fit, he's nobody swings a club better than he does. He can play as good as anybody. And Martin Keimer, I know it sounds funny to say Martin Keimer's an outsider. 54th he was last year in the race to Dubai. So he qualifies for those 50 pluses that you can pick. And he's won around this golf course, Paul.
I think Martin would be a great call.
Oh, I feel a butt coming.
Well, yeah, I'm just
controversial.
Having watched him with the chipper, and it's not great if he gets out of position. But having said that, like I said before, there are big greens here. You expect the winner to hit a lot of greens in regulation. So maybe his weakness around the greens and his approaches to the greens won't be shown up this week.
And before we move on to the fancy race to Dubai, worth mentioning that the current score is presenters 45, co-presenters 25. A lot of pressure on your shoulders, Paul, this week.
Yes, Bav, I'm quite happy with my picks. Thank you very much.
And Roddy feels slightly left out and annexed here, but his score doesn't count this week.
So he's playing for fun.
Oh.
So he's had a completely free go with no pressure at all.
Right, can we not have a wild card? And if mine don't do very well, then Roddy's can come in?
Roddy, in brackets?
Yes.
In parentheses?
Yeah.
No. Oh. So the Fantasy Race to Dubai, to remind you, is starting now in 2019. The game is back, the game that we all love to play, and this is the first counting week, the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship presented by EGA. Go to europeantour.com to register your team and be in with the chance to win hundreds of pounds worth of vouchers for the European Tour Shop. Not to mention the bragging rights you'll have over your mates if you're in a group, which is, of course, priceless, as it is on this show. A reminder, go to europeantour.com to find out all the details and to register your team. Good luck. You'll be playing Paul again, will you?
Yes, yeah, I'm going to be in. I don't know, where did I finish? I think I did all right last year.
I think
year.
You did do okay, yeah. Do you play, Roddy?
I do.
So the thing you mustn't do, and I've learnt this, is have a week where you miss the deadline and it goes to auto-pick.
Yes, yeah.
If you get an auto-pick, everyone goes flying past
yes,
you.
Yes, they do, yeah.
Yeah, so I've had too many auto-picks. I'm going to be fastidious this year. Every single week, I'm going to get it in before the deadline.
That's negligence, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. It's shoddy.
Shoddy word.
Roddy.
You get a reminder. There's no excuse.
Yeah, no. This week, I'm not going to miss one, and we'll see how we do. So I'm looking forward to it. And it starts, of course, this week in Abu Dhabi. Now let's move on to Matters Ryder Cup. And of course, as you all know, the new Ryder Cup captain has been announced. It will be Padraig Harrington taking the helm, taking us all the way out to the next Ryder Cup at Whistling Straits in a couple of years' time. So let's get some input from Henrik Stenson out in Abu Dhabi on what he thinks about the appointment.
It felt like for sure that he was kind of next in line and that he's up and ready for it. He's been a vice captain, played on numerous Ryder Cup teams. He's been a world-class player for many, many years and a very successful one as well. So now I think he'll bring his calmness. He's kind of even-keeled. He's not super highs and super lows with Padre. He kind of stays balanced and each and one of the captains are going to put their own twist on it, and he'll bring his own personality and his experience and thoughts on what he'd like to see. I think when you're part of that team, both as a player and as a vice captain over time, you pick up things. You're looking back on certain decision making that might have been great, that might not have been great, and all the little details, anything from shirt sizes to caps and visors to when you notify players on if they're playing or not and the whole bit. I mean, there's a lot of things that goes into it, more than you might think. I think he'll just make it his own and he'll be a good captain.
Your thoughts, Paul, on the Harrington appointment?
I think it's a fantastic appointment, and knowing the way Padraig goes about his business, where he's so thorough, I think his team, or the team that will represent Europe, will have somebody at the helm, will just have everything in place. There won't be anything that he'll miss.
And Roddy from European Tour HQ?
Absolutely agree. I think his record speaks for itself as a player, but the continuity as well that we've had, and which I think has been such a strength of the European Ryder Cup cause, where he's been vice-captain three times now. And I think, as Paul said there, he's going to be meticulous in his planning, and I think that he will leave absolutely no stone unturned. He's played under and worked alongside numerous captains. He would have learned from all of those. He would have taken notes from all of those. And I think that, he will be a fantastic captain. I think he's also very well liked over in America. I think the fans will enjoy him, as enjoy his captaincy. No, very excited about Padraig being captain.
And I'm really, really thrilled to say that the brand new Ryder captain for the next Ryder Cup match at Whistling Straits is Padraig Harrington. He's joining us live on the Race to Dubai show. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I have a broken wrist, but I assume it's healing. It's in a cast, which is so annoying. I'm not meant to take the cast off, but by God, does it smell. So, yeah, take it off and watch. I actually don't know how anybody has, one of those full casts on for like 4 or 6 weeks. Like, this thing, is I can take on and off, obviously, but it's very annoying.
How does it feel to be a captain? Has it sort of sunk in yet that you're something different now?
Yeah, I'm surprised by it, actually. I knew I'd be busy, with media and different things, but I'm surprised, actually, how much I'm thinking about. Normally, if somebody says to you, okay, you're doing an interview or you have a couple of interviews to do, I literally, 5 minutes before the interview, that's when I start thinking about it. But with this Ryder Cup, I seem to be thinking about it a lot. And I know looking at past captains, we used to always joke, you couldn't meet a captain as he was leading up to his Ryder Cup, that he wouldn't talk to you about the Ryder Cup. And you think, God, it's all about the Ryder Cup with him. He can't see anything else. And I'm falling into that trap too. It's very much all I can think about.
Padraig, Paul Eales here. Congratulations on this fantastic honour. Now, I don't know about yourself. I was a little bit concerned when you said, yes, I'm going to do it. I knew that, yes, you wanted to do it, but you're still a great player. You've just won just recently. I know you've had your injury now, but how are you going to try and balance the two of giving your all to your playing career, which I know has just been fantastic, and also this huge responsibility of taking on the European team?
This is my time to do the Ryder Cup. You know, it's in the US. I'm getting to that age. I've had a solid, a good career, and you know, everybody was walking me into the captaincy, and I had to stand back and say, well, actually, do I want to do this? Do I want to take the pressure of this, the stress of this? And also, am I prepared to put the effort in, knowing that it obviously takes away from my golf? Now, I certainly sat down and thought about it and said, look, I've got to a stage with my golf, and you guys will know this as you get a little older. It doesn't change day to day. It doesn't matter how much practice I do on given days. My golf is not going to change much. So I'm not as stressed about getting all the work done, all the gym work, all the diet, everything that I would have been 10 years ago. I'm more relaxed. I enjoy myself in a different way than I would have done 15, 20 years ago when I would have been exceptionally competitive. So I felt I had room to do this Ryder Cup as well as play some golf. Now, I knew next year, as we get closer to the event, that would change. But the one thing, as I said, I'm 2 weeks, just a week into the job now, and I'm surprised. I know it's very fresh, but I am surprised how much mental energy it's absorbing. I was absolutely knackered last week. I think I had to go to bed every afternoon last week with tiredness due to the mental stress, which I really didn't think I had. I kind of got past that barrier, I thought, of, you know, getting, you know, worrying and stress about talking and things like that and what you're going to say. But the Ryder Cup is a new level.
Padraig, hi, it's Roddy here, and congratulations on the captaincy as well.
Thank you.
You obviously made your debut back in 1999 and have played under numerous captains and worked alongside them as vice-captain in the last three Ryder Cups. Have you been keeping a record of things that you've learned in a little black book, and have you started thumbing through that black book yet, if you have?
It is a little black book. Well, it's actually a big black book. Did I keep a record when I was playing? No. No. Did I sit down after I finished playing this when I became my first vice-captain? Yes, I wrote things down that I'd learned over the previous 12 years. But to be honest, you learn far more as a vice-captain. You're behind the scenes. You're seeing what's going on. There's a lot more to it than you think. And it's essential for future captains to be vice-captains, and probably more than once.
Most people think, Padraig, that vice-captains sort of just float around and get a whole stack of cashmeres to wear for the week. I mean, that's pretty much it. Everyone knows how demanding and all-consuming the captain's role is, but tell us what it's like to be a vice-captain.
Well, that was it. When I was vice-captain for McGinley, that was pretty much it. He was very organised, very prepared, and because of his organisation, maybe, but things went smoothly all week. He had preempted nearly every decision for the whole week. So we were sent out to watch players and maybe to mind one or two players, but not a huge amount to do. Under Darren, it was different. Obviously, Darren got thrown a big curveball at the start of the week. Things went awry. Things went against him. And there was a lot of decisions to be made in you know, when things were, you know, in trouble. A lot of decisions made under stress. And you see a lot more and you realise the job of a vice-captain in those situations. And I think the great thing about that going in with Thomas, I was the only vice-captain who had done it before, but I knew, I talked to the other vice-captains, and Thomas was great in this sense. He knew as well. And he allowed us, the vice-captain, prepare the information for Thomas to make his decision, which is essential because the captain is distracted during the week. There's a lot of things going on for the captain. It's essential he has people who can really pull the detail together and present it to him at the right time.
Do you like order, Padraig, or do you like chaos?
Well, my golf has been pretty much chaos. So, I understand chaos. I can happily deal with chaos, but obviously if you have order, it's actually quite boring. But when it comes to the Ryder Cup, I would love to have lovely order for the week, yes.
Padraig, you spoke in your interview about change. Inevitably, there'll be changes going forward. If you could tell us what you think they may be. But one of the things that interested me, that, you know, back to 99, you were a rookie in that environment. It was hostile. And also, you were used by Monty to guide a rookie through when you were an experienced player. What do you think those experienced players will be able to bring to the rookies in the team? Because it has moved on from 99, the Ryder Cup, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think 99 was a bad year to pull out the rookies, because clearly the rookies, weren't trusted, they weren't played. I got playing only because Jose Maria Lasval refused to play foursomes. He was meant to go in, they subbed me in with Miguel Angel Jimenez. It was literally, you know, the rookies weren't trusted. What we've seen in other Ryder Cups, and pre-99 too, is when a rookie is managed right and put with the right player, you can take a David Guildford with Seve, they outplay themselves. They play better than the senior player. They're the stars of the show. And I know when I played with Fish was my rookie in
Celtic Manor.
And like, he's a good player, but by God, he believed so much in what I was telling him. He played like a superstar. It was unbelievable how well he played because I just kept telling him, and he trusted me. And that's what you need. You need that relationship between a rookie and a senior player that the rookie believes he just believes so much in his senior player. And we've seen that along the way. We've seen lots of situations like that. Now, you can have other situations where, like you had Mollywood last time, where neither of them were the senior or the rookie. They were both on a level pairing. Sometimes that works. And I'd love to have a Mollywood, obviously, next time round. But I'm very aware that there will be, if not two or three rookies, another one or two who've been in the Ryder Cup team coming back in. And they've played great. You know, they have done brilliant in the Ryder Cups. I think at this stage, and this is what we're changing from years back, a rookie in form is to be trusted. So if a rookie qualifies, he's playing well, he's on a high, trust him. He's better than an experienced guy at times who's not playing well. So, yeah, I would hope that we get a couple of really good rookies. I mean hot rookies who are good under pressure. That's what I'd be looking for. Guys who really enjoy the battle coming down the stretch, who are also playing well. So, like, you know, somebody like Matt Wallace missed out this time. Wow, do I hope he keeps on this run? Because he's the sort of attitude you want. If he's playing great going into that, that's the sort of style of player you want going into a Ryder Cup.
Patrick, you mentioned you were a rookie there at Brookline in 99. You're obviously going to be playing over in America. It's a very different story in an away match. What are your thoughts so at the moment regarding competing over in America and on Whistling Straits?
Home advantage has turned out to be a big part of the Ryder Cup, maybe even a big issue in the Ryder Cup in terms of home captain gets to set up the golf course the way he wants. Both sides now are bringing statisticians and basically telling the home captain, look, set the golf course up this way. It gives your players a huge advantage. That's what happened at Hazeltine. That's what happened in Paris. So yeah, that's a big issue. I thankfully going to Whistling Straits, I don't think it's easy to change that golf course from what it is. It's a big, solid golf course. Windy, might play pretty tough that late in the year. You know, it's fairly open as it is. So I don't see the next captain being able to change it that much. So on that sense, it's decent. Then we move on to obviously home crowds. My friends watch the Ryder Cup because of the crowds. They watch it because of the atmosphere. You know, the crowds get vocal. That's why the European players love it. They love the buzz. They don't get that buzz anywhere else. They just don't get that buzz. So the crowds are a huge part of it, and we never want them to go away. Like, if we played the Ryder Cup behind closed doors, nobody would be watching it. Nobody would be interested in it. So the crowds are a huge part of it. Now, because it's become such a big sporting occasion, there's obviously a substantial amount of the crowds who are not from a golfing background, and they can get quite vocal, and sometimes they miss time. They're vocal. Obviously, the one or two, and it's very, very limited, the ones that cross the line of decency. That does, you know, it has happened, and the Americans would say it happens, but they're over here. So it's limited. So obviously that needs to be looked after, but it's not the big issue. Just probably missed timing of the odd shout, and that at this stage, you know, the Americans were cheered when they hit the balls in the water in France. So there's no way I'm going to the States and saying, no, telling my guys, oh, they won't cheer when you hit a bad shot. They're going to cheer when you hit a bad shot. That's the reality of the Ryder Cup. You know, we'll have to work on the fact of some sort of education to the non-golfers that, you know, let the guys hit their shots and then do as you please after that, within the lines of decency.
How omnipotent are you, Padraig, in terms of if you want to change the qualifying process or how many picks you have? How much of it is all your say?
I get quite a bit of a say in that. I've asked for a few questions and they're going to present me with some statistical background, some detail. But I do get quite a say in the timings and how many get picked. You know, the value of points, these are all to be discussed at this stage. I clearly want to have the best team, but I'm aware as well. Look, I am aware. This is very big for the European Tour. This is huge for the European players. And not just our European-born players. It's huge for everybody who plays in Europe. You look at the amount of support we get from the South Africans, and there's a lot of people who are on the European Tour for the Ryder Cup. So I know I'm representing the European Ryder Cup, and I want to make sure that European-based players, if they play the golf, that they have a great chance of being in that team. I want to encourage our international players to compete in Europe and play the big event and win their points there as well. So I'm on the side of, as much as I want the best team, I'm on the side of the European Tour as well. I'm aware that I represent them as much as the Ryder Cup.
I mean, you've already mentioned now how much it means the players to experience and play in a Ryder Cup. I mean, you won three major championships. Can you give us some idea of the difference in emotions from a Ryder Cup to winning a major? You know, what are the highs and lows? Would one be higher than the other, or are they different in so many different ways?
They are different. I won three majors. First one, very exciting. First major, unbelievable. Second one, the Open in 2008 at Birkdale. I won, I felt in style. I hit all the shots, did everything. And I had a tremendous feeling of satisfaction. I won like you would dream of winning as a 15-year-old kid holding that putt. That's how I felt. I felt like I was the favourite and did the job. And then I stole my last one. It was a bit ugly, and I stole it at the end of the day. So I got three different emotions. But each time you're celebrating with you and your friends and family and team. With the Ryder Cup, you get all those situations. You get the ones, obviously, you get across the line. There is some personal side to the Ryder Cup, winning your own matches. You know, I've played in Ryder Cups where you've won the team event and you've lost your singles, or you haven't had a good week, and you kind of, it just takes a little while to get into it. But what you understand when you get into it, it is all about the team. And you sell it's such a team bonding that you don't get anywhere else. For us, anyway, you know, obviously, if you play the team sport, but we just don't get that. And I as a vice captain, that's what I've got to see the last couple of years. I see the players in the team room and how they really, really, not just bond, but how much they get back from the Ryder Cup that they don't get anywhere else. The adulation they get from their teammates, the buzz in the team room, the genuine respect. You know, I even go as far to say is we've seen bromance, genuine love in the team room for each other. And that's not normal for golfers. You know, we're so individual. We're competing against each other all the time. Yeah, and that Ryder Cup, it really does. There's something special about us, and it gives to the players. It's something no player who's been there would ever want to do without if they always want it again.
Padraig, listen, thank you very much for spending this time with us on the Race to Dubai show. We're all thrilled that you are the captain going forward and taking us into Whistling Straits, and hopefully it'll be successful and we'll get an away victory in American soil. How about that?
That would be tremendous. It's, yeah, let's do it.
Good luck, Padraig.
Thank you.
Well, he's in good form, isn't he?
He is in good form, yeah, and so he should be. Exciting, but yeah. He said there that first week just how tired he was. So
I think that's the sort of period where the enormity of the job, all of a sudden you think about it, but then you realise you are the backstop. Not to coin a fractious Irish phrase these days, but you are where everything stops and finishes and starts. You're the captain. Yeah. And now he's taken that on board.
Yeah, and he's got a huge amount of experience, and he will grow into it, I'm sure. I think everything's come at him, you know, 100 miles an hour, hasn't it, to start with? But you know, like I said to him, I think he's still got to keep playing, hasn't he? You know, and knowing Padraig the
way... He'll want to be out there with the youngsters, won't he?
Cool, but yeah. But not only just being there, he'll want to be competitive as well, because that's just how he is.
And distract himself.
Oh, yeah, for
you know,
sure.
Distract himself from the captaincy, because sure. It'll be all-consuming.
Yeah, he'll do a great job.
Are you getting his positive vibe, Roddy?
I think it's absolutely. I think it's fascinating that he just seems to be so absorbed in it already. You know, this is going to be a process that's going to last, 18 months plus. And I think that the fact that he's already just thinking about it all the time, he's going to give it everything. And I think that's absolutely wonderful.
And you know what? For us in the media, Podrick's going to be a godsend for the next, 2 years nearly, until the next match. He's going to be just wonderful for us. So, yeah, we're all looking forward to it. Great stuff. Padraig Harrington, the new Ryder Cup captain. Now, in other news, elsewhere in the world of golf, congratulations to England's Charlie Hull, who earned a wire-to-wire win in the Fatima Bint Mubarak Ladies Open in Abu Dhabi to claim her second Ladies European Tour title. That's amazing. She's only won two of those. She is such a good player.
Hull 22 took a one-shot lead into the final round, and a 3-under par 69 saw her finish a shot ahead of Norway's Marianne Skarpnord on 8-under par. I bet you're surprised at that, hearing that, that she's only won two European Tour events. I know she's playing mostly on the LPGA Tour, but still.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say, Rob. I think she's spending a lot of time in the States and around the world, but only two wins, yeah. But maybe that's going to open the floodgates for Charlie.
Do you know, I played in the British Par 3 competition in the last round with Charlie. She was fantastic, I got to say. I can't believe there are 10 better or 9 better lady golfers than her in the world. She's a top tenner for me, guaranteed. So maybe this is the start, Roddy.
Absolutely. I think, as you say, she's a great player. And I think that, you know, as we've said earlier on in the show, you know, confidence breeds confidence. And I think that having got this win, I think she can continue to progress and continue to go on and win many more titles. Very exciting. And obviously, she played a part in the Golf Sixes last year, which we had.
Georgia Hall.
With Georgia Hall, yeah. And I think there's...
She loved that as well, didn't she? Was a great addition to the field, wasn't she? I thought, anyway.
I thought so as well. I thought it was a great event, great having them part of it. And I think that we've got other exciting formats coming up this year as well. We've got the Jordan Mixed Open, which where we're going to see the Ladies European Tour, the Challenge Tour and the Stateshore Tour all competing out in Jordan later on in the year. And I think that, you know, it's great when you've got when you bring these together, because I think that, you know, the world of golf needs that. And I think that... seeing the success of the likes of Charlie Hull, Georgina Hall, you know, these are all fantastic achievements.
Ambassadors for the ladies' game, no doubt about that. Mm. And congratulations to Matt Kuchar, who claimed the Sony Open on the PGA Tour. His total of minus 22 put him 4 shots clear of his American compatriot, Andrew Putnam. And while we're in the congratulatory spirit, let's say well done to Jon Rahm, who's been named as the winner of the King Juan Carlos Award at Spain's National Sports Award. Well done, Jon Rahm. And he'll be looking forward to a massive 2019 as well. The award recognises the most promising Spanish athlete, and Rahm was honoured at a glittering ceremony attended by the King and Queen of Spain. Paul, can we please get the official world rankings, please?
Yes, we can, Rob. And in 10th place is Tony Finau. 9th is Francesco Molinari. 8th is Rory McIlroy. 7th, Jon Rahm. 6th, Xander Schauffele. 5th, Bryson DeChambeau. 4th is Justin Thomas. 3rd is Dustin Johnson. 2nd, Brooks Koepka. And leading the way, number one golfer in the world at the moment is Justin Rose.
Well done. Thank you, Paul. That's about it for now. Join us next week when we will review the action from the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship presented by EGA and look ahead to the next stop on the European Tour, still staying in the desert just down the road, the Omega Dubai Desert Classic. Until then, you can stay up to date with all the latest news on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and Snapchat by europeantour.com or by downloading the official app. And do leave us a review, please, if you're downloading the podcast from Audioboom, iTunes or Apple Podcasts, and make sure they're lovely and friendly and cuddly. But until then, from Paul Eales, who's gone for
Tommy Fleetwood and Gavin Green.
And Roddy, I know you're outside the point scoring system, but we value your input. Who have you gone for?
I went for Matt Wallace and Adri Arnus.
And I've gone for Louis Oosthuizen and, of course, Martin Keimer. We will see you next week.